can I do?
In the air room with Right Meat. Then geeks, welcome to Geek Speak. Season in the news. Tablet PCs are growing faster than they had been projected to do so, selling roughly 150,000 units in 2002, and in 2003 they are predicted to reach 675,000 units, about 5% of overall notebook market, and that is much faster than had been predicted for the tablet PC industry. Wi-Fi 802.11b continues to grow.
With the tablet PC, it seems like it's really opening up markets in real estate, healthcare, and the legal environments. And Wi-Fi is certainly on the rise too, which is good in the down economy. It looks like Intel and Marriott have made a deal to get 400 Marriott Renaissance Courtyard Residence Inn and other hotels in the United States, United Kingdom, and Germany, and Canada. So that's really nice. Of course, you know, those are just going to be hot spots. You won't have wireless in every room. That would be very expensive, I think, to install, to set up.
And a lot of these hotels have a direct connection in the rooms.
In the rooms, sure. Typically, yeah. But I would think this would be in their lobbies and in places where people meet, restaurants and that sort of thing.
Now, California is considering a net sales tax.
That's another big piece of news. Is California is currently, if you're a company in California and you're selling items on the internet, you have to charge sales tax to people in California buying from your, you know, from the company. But now it looks like Gray Davis and his camp, because of the $35 billion shortfall,
sure,
are considering charging sales tax to any company selling to California residents. So there are already other states that are doing this. I guess Utah is one of them. They're welcoming California considering this. You know, because
it'll be a big push to do that.
Yeah, it would legitimize the whole thing and make it easier to pass in Congress and make it easier at the end of the year for them to figure out how all this gets worked out. Because when California does things, it tends to make the whole process easier because California does the brunt of the hard work.
Sure, sure. Now, in the game console arena, Microsoft and Electronic Arts are both reportedly trying to purchase Sega.
Sega. Sega out of Tokyo. They're huge. They did the Dreamcast, which didn't do so well. It's pretty much dead
now.
That's
kind of causing them to maybe be a perfect situation.
It looks like the game company Sammy, who makes the pachinko game machine, is considering going in with Sega to help make it a little more financially strong. But it looks like Sega itself has abandoned restructuring plans and is now considering offers from some American companies, including Microsoft and EA. So for Microsoft, that would get the Xbox possibly into Japan a little more than it already is. And for EA, it would be a way to knock out a major competitor.
Because EA is one of the high players in the market.
They are the biggest, yeah.
Now, we're all familiar with these bright LEDs that are in traffic lights and little handheld flashlights. And soon, it's potential for them to start going into the light bulb arena.
Yeah, a company called Omron of Kyoto, Japan, has announced research that makes the LED more of a viable product for the light bulb, a replacement for the light bulb. And what they've done is they've taken the little LED that's, you know, it's kind of small. You could probably fit four of them in the size of a pinky, you know, like the end of a flashlight. They've made these 3 centimeters square with the thickness of about 6 millimeters. And what they can now do is offer an even glow over a wide surface. So it'd be a way to even bring, right now you've got little fluorescent bulbs,
right,
with little transformers that, you know, can probably turn a 60 watt bulb into maybe 11 watts.
Right, right.
Well, these would consume even less power than that.
But would conceivably be instant on, like a normal light bulb.
Yeah, it would be instant on. It would provide more light.
And the real difference here is that normally, right now, they kind of have like an uneven spread. Like you can see the pattern that they make.
Pretty much.
Okay.
You know, and they're really small, so they don't offer a lot of light.
Oh, right.
These would be wider, would offer more consistent light, and would be far brighter.
Cool. And they last longer than light bulbs.
Yeah, much longer.
So when are we going to see LED technology starting to go more into the handheld arena?
Well, Samsung has just announced that their research and development emitting diode. Anybody wondering what LED stands for? So their organic light emitting diode is pretty much done. And now they're looking for ways to market their technology. And this is going to be the next generation from the LCD, which is liquid crystal display used in most notebooks today. The difference is, and what you get from this, is LCDs require a backlight, making them require more power, and they need thicker displays for LCDs, whereas organic LEDs do not require a backlight, because the little transistors themselves, one of the properties of the organic LED is that when electronic charge is applied, they automatically, the characteristic is they bright up, they emit
right.
light. So you don't need a backlight, which means they can make them thinner, smaller.
So the color and the light actually is one device rather than the two-stage liquid crystal.
Okay. Correct.
Yeah. Well, great. Thank you very much for the news.
Yeah.
Was there one more issue on that?
No, I was just going to say that OLED projected growth is from about 112 million worldwide in 2002 to about 3.1 billion in 2007. So
it's
you can expect that's going to take off.
Right. Was there any other items you had on the plate?
No, just Intel Developer Forum last week finished off with Craig Barrett, the CEO of Intel, pretty much reaffirming Moore's Law. Anybody out there wondering if Moore's Law is going to go away? According to Craig, it's still here to stay. There are a lot of...
So it looks like they're conquering the issues that we talked about last week.
Yeah, although we've been in talks with Intel here at GeekSpeak, and it looks like we'll have a representative on in the next month.
We'll be able to learn more about that pretty soon.
We can ask them directly.
Great. In the last 3 years, or about 3 years ago, the Internet drove technical savvy or the tech job sector to a situation where companies were starving for talent and prices were through the roof for people. And in the years that followed, the most recent times where the dot-com industry, the Internet kind of crashed and it affected in the wide spectrum of hardware and multiple high-tech job sectors, we're seeing mass layoffs, lots of people out of work, and companies through difficult times. And today on GeekSpeak, we're going to be talking with Marky Stein. She'll join us in just a second about the job industry, how you get a job. Your qualified person can still get a job, how you do that, how hard it is, and what the arena feels like. Marky Stein is an author, career coach, and public speaker, and has been actively involved in career counseling and recruiting since 1989. Ms. Stein specializes in working with entry-level to executive mid-career professionals from over 50 of the Fortune 500 companies, including Toshiba, Levi Strauss, Dell, Compaq, Tandem, Fujitsu, Blue Shield, IBM, Cisco, 3Com, Palm, Hewlett-Packard, Kodak, Hilton, Hitachi, and others. Marky, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thanks, Lyle. It's great to be here. And it was wonderful driving from the not-so-beautiful Silicon Valley to the very beautiful Santa Cruz.
The Monterey Bay is just wonderful, isn't it?
It's wonderful.
Marky, I see that in your arena you've got Palm, and Palm just announced something recently, right?
Yes. What you're finding right now, Lyle, are just a series of rolling layoffs. Companies that I went into as a consultant maybe 3 years ago are companies I'm now returning to again. For example, Advanced Micro Devices, also known as AMD, has had just a series of rolling layoffs that have affected thousands of people in the Silicon Valley and people commuting there.
And these layoffs, basically, what kind of staffs are they getting rid of? Who's being targeted?
It's really across the board. You're going to see entry-level people, like people who assemble semiconductor fab assembly, all the way to directors and managers of IT, all the way through human resources and marketing people.
And PR.
And PR, exactly.
And speaking of PR, Sean Cleveland, one of the geeks, standard geeks here on GeekSpeak, one of the reasons we got hooked up with you, Marky, is that Sean was laid off from AMD a while ago. And he's in that realm right now of searching. And Sean, can you tell me a little bit from your experience what's it like out there from the trenches?
It's not good. It's like sending letters out, even to people you know or thought you knew, and just not hearing anything back. It's amazing. People must be inundated with thousands of requests for jobs, and I can't imagine being somebody having to look for, you know, if you're looking for workers, if you're looking for somebody to hire, got just a mountain of papers that must be coming in right now.
Mark, do you find that that's what's happening for?
Yes, Sean used the word inundated very appropriately. It's actually estimated by the Society for Human Resources Management that a human resources person is likely to go through 3,500 resumes in 1 week.
Oh.
So with those kind of odds, job seekers are going to find themselves searching for anywhere from 7 months to 14 months. What is the good news is that I know of some methods where you don't have to search that long and you can probably land a job within 90 days, even in this economy.
Okay, well, what is that method? I'm assuming it's not throw your resume in front of that HR person who sees 3,000 a week.
Exactly. It's been estimated by a man named J. Michael Farr from Indianapolis, who studies job statistics, that you have about a 1 in 1,470 chance of getting an interview if you mail your resume to an internet ad or a newspaper ad. Now, we call that the advertised job market because...
Does that mean that... I'm sorry to interrupt, but does that mean that you recommend not even doing it, not even wasting your time?
Or? No, I recommend using a variety of techniques, but let me break down the statistics
Yeah, I'd love to hear.
1 in 3% of people find a job by sending their resume to a newspaper or newspaper ad. So you could be lucky. You could win the lottery. There's no reason you shouldn't send your resume to a newspaper ad, but just don't expect much of a yield from that. Now, let's take a look at the internet. We're doing a little bit better there. 13% of people are finding jobs by sending their resumes to an internet ad. So you're doing a little bit better on the internet than you are with the newspaper. It's found that 16 to 18% of people are finding jobs by hooking up with a recruiter. Sometimes recruiters have a bad name. They're called headhunters, and they're considered to be quite vicious in the way they search for a job. But in fact, if you really hook up with a good recruiter, you will be among that 16 to 18% who are finding jobs. Now, the really good news is that 70% of people are finding jobs through networking and cold calling.
So basically, knowing someone who knows somebody, or just going randomly and calling and trying to find the right manager and say, hey, I'm available and you want to talk to me.
That's exactly right. And if you break down, if you introduce the variable of time to finding a job in the networking and cold calling scenario, you'll find that networking takes about 7 months to find a job, whereas cold calling takes about 3 to 4 months. They're both equally effective, but cold calling is going to be a lot faster for you.
Now, are those cases such a good way to do it because not very many people are doing it that way? Is that and maybe taking the HR person out of the picture? Is that?
That is exactly it, Lyle. When you take the HR person out of the picture, you're getting rid of a whole sector of people whose job it is to screen you out. When you call directly into a company to a manager or director or VP, they're much likely to have an overview of the company, of job openings that may be happening in the future, and they're much more likely to want to nurture new talent than an HR person would be.
Hmm. Okay. And, of course, at the end of the whole HR process, even if you do get through that way, you're still basically going to talk to that manager.
You're going to go there anyway, so you're just cutting out one of the steps. And, in fact, I'll repeat that statistic again. Compare the 1 in 1,470 chances you have sending your resume to a newspaper to the 1 in 12 chances you have in getting an interview from directly calling someone within that company with the power to hire you.
Okay. Now, of course, that statistic is not that you'll every 1 in 12 position, you'll 1 in 12 cold calls you'll actually get a job, but that assuming that eventually you'll find a job, you're a 1 in 12 chance to do it there rather than through newspapers or through internet resume submitting.
Right. Maybe I wasn't completely clear about that. It's you have 1 in 12 chances to get an interview.
Okay.
When you're doing a cold calling technique.
So it's very effective. Now, when you say, I want to go back into cold calling in just a second, because I know there's a whole process to it. But in the more known arena of, quote, networking, what does that really mean? What do you really do there?
Networking really means that first you contact all your friends, and then you contact all your people from your family. Then you contact people from any associations you belong to, like alumni associations, or I know that the IEEE is a very popular association for engineers. There's the American Marketing Association. It's really wise to get on one of these associations' roster, because then you can actually just start calling people from the association and asking about opportunities in the field, which they might know about before the opportunity is actually advertised. So some people who are very serious about networking go as far as to say, tell your pastor, tell your dry cleaner, tell the person who washes your car, tell your housekeeper, tell every single person you know that you're looking for a job, and hopefully that person will know someone within a company that you're interested in.
And that's really what it comes down to, that someone, one of your connections, one of your degrees of people has a job waiting for you, really.
Exactly. We call them A connections, B connections, and C connections. A connections are your friends. B connections are just people they might know in a company. And B connections hopefully have access to C connections, which are the people with the power to hire you.
Uh-huh.
So if you can get from A to B to C, you've probably gotten an interview. Now, when you consider cold calling, you're calling that C person right then.
Right.
So you're eliminating a lot of steps, which is why it takes a lot less time.
Okay. Now, this all relies upon companies hiring. Are companies hiring?
Actually, companies are hiring. You know, it's really strange, Lyle. I learned a lot about the media recently. I don't know how many of you read in the newspaper that 11,450 people were hired in June, between June and September of 2002. I don't know how many of you read that 20,000 jobs were created by California, state of California, in October of 2002. And the reason you don't read about that is it doesn't sell papers.
Right.
Papers would much rather plaster all over them, layoff, horrifying economy.
Right.
And it's true, there are some horrifying layoffs, and it is a very dangerous economy. But there are jobs to be found. And what I learned about the media, and I hope the person who interviewed me is not listening to this right now, is that someone from a very prominent newspaper interviewed me about, the question was whether I thought the recession would ease up soon and there would be more jobs. What I answered was, no, but I know a lot of recession-proof job search techniques, and here they are. And I went on to describe them for 20 minutes. Take a guess, Lyle, what they printed in the paper from my quote.
that there's not going to be a turnaround quickly.
Exactly.
Right,
it says,
right.
Marky Stein, Silicon Valley job expert, predicts that there will be no turnaround in the economy, period.
Right, which is completely misleading and depressing for someone who's not, doesn't have a job. I mean, I guess a lot of this, especially when you're cold calling, that takes a lot of fortitude and self-reliance to call someone, you know, slightly randomly and pitch yourself. That's a difficult thing to do. And any situation where you start doubting yourself, like, well, the economy's bad, there's no jobs out there, any of those kind of doubts will completely devastate that ability of you to do that. Is that?
That's exactly right. This is definitely an economy where you have to take a look at, I think it's the old Zen proverb, Zen proverb of the glass being half full rather than half empty. If you get into a mindset of the half empty, or even three quarters empty, that's probably more accurate, it can really be a destructive mindset to be in. You have to keep your idea on that one-fourth of the glass that's full.
Right. Okay, let's talk a little bit in detail how someone cold calls.
Okay. When you're cold calling, first of all, you have to identify a person within a company that would likely to be hiring you in the near future. Usually that person is two steps above you. So if you are working on an engineering team or IT team, you would not be calling your direct manager. You'd probably want to focus on the director or even the VP level. How do you find those people? Well, believe it or not, your library card can help you find those people. The Santa Cruz and San Jose libraries have access to databases like Reference USA and Rich's Guide to the Silicon Valley, which will actually show you names of people from the director level up that you can call.
Why do they have those databases?
I think they have them for sales purposes. I'm not really sure, you know, why they would print that. But there are actually some databases like Hoovers.com, which is one of my favorites, where you can get a lot of free information, but even more information if you pay something like $50 a year, where they even print the salaries of some of the executives. So it's really rather shocking what's available on the Internet, but
right.
I think especially technical people know that anything that gets published once on the Internet is going to be is multiplied, and you're going to be able to find it.
And, of course, public companies, that kind of stuff is in the prospectus, I mean, at least for executive-level positions.
Yes.
If you're looking for names for executives, another thing you can do is look at press releases. Oftentimes, they have quotes from executives and directors. If you're looking for names.
So if you know the name of the company you want to work for, you're halfway there to finding who you're supposed to call, right?
That's exactly right.
Now, how do you find out what companies are hiring, or does that matter?
It really doesn't matter what companies are hiring, because if you can sort of picture a hiring cycle, a hire doesn't just appear out of thin air into the newspaper. It begins with someone thinking about wanting to hire someone. And usually from the time that someone is thinking about hiring someone to the time it actually appears in the newspaper can be 6 months in a large company. So if you can catch that director, that VP, that manager, while they're thinking about it, but it's not advertised, you will have virtually no competition.
Now, what about the whole aspect that you're calling someone up and saying, hey, you need to hire me? How do you even do that conversation? Let's get to that in just a minute. You're listening to Geek Speak. I'm Lyle Troxell. In the air room with me are geeks Sean Cleveland and Miles Elam. We're talking about the high-tech job arena with career coach Marky Stein. If you'd like to join the discussion, you may call 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. And this is Central Coast Public Radio. You can call in regarding your experience job hunting or any information or any other questions you might have. Just basically for the geeks.
This is Sean Cleveland bringing you a Geek Bit. ATA and SCSI are two hard drive connection technologies that can be quite confusing and deserve some explanation. ATA, often referred to as IDE, dates back to the earliest days of the PC and is the most widespread interface used to connect hard drives, CD and DVD drives. This is because almost all computers have at least one built-in ATA interface. The ATA standard supports two drives per connector, and as a rule, a single drive is connected as the master, configured via small pins on the drive itself, while a second drive on the same cable is configured as the slave. ATA drives are mass-produced and are marketed for the more reasonably priced consumer market, and as such, they are not designed to be as fast as their SCSI-based hard drive cousins. ATA connections are also relegated to shorter cable lengths of 18 inches. SCSI, pronounced SCSI, is an acronym for Small Computer System Interface, but it's anything but small. SCSI is a high-speed interface designed for workstation and server-class computers. Typically, a SCSI expansion board, called a host adapter, is required since not all computers come with SCSI ports. The SCSI interface has some very advanced features that allow for more intelligent data retrieval. And, unlike the ATA interface, SCSI can connect dozens of drives and have cable lengths of up to 3 meters. Since SCSI hard drives are designed for high-speed server environments, they are built to be more rugged and to last longer. And they have faster spindle speeds, the speed at which the hard drive platters are spun underneath the read head. Of course, these benefits come at a higher price. Speed is the main differentiating factor between these two hard drive standards. Consumer-based ATA drives are designed to spin their data platters at speeds of 5,400 RPMs or 7,200 RPMs. SCSI hard drives come in much faster speeds, ranging from 10,000 RPMs to 15,000 RPMs. This Geek Bit is brought to you by the Geeks of GeekSpeak. Join us for GeekSpeak Friday mornings at 9 a.m. here on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP.
This program is supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing internet service, including DSL and spam filters, for home and office throughout Santa Cruz County. Information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. We are talking about the tech industry. You're welcome to join the conversation with Marky Stein, author. And if you're interested about Marky Stein, you can visit markystein.com, or you can look up her book online or available from Barnes & Noble and Amazon, both in the in top positions in the recently. Fearless Interview by Marky Stein, available through McGraw-Hill. You can also look up Marky Stein in Google and find out about some other articles she's written, specifically some articles pertaining directly to how you make cold calls. If you'd like to call in and talk with Marky, or if you'd like to call in and ask the Geeks any questions, you're welcome to do so. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You are listening to GeekSpeak. My name is Lyle Troxell. We are talking high-tech job market and hunting with Marky Stein. Geeks Sean and Miles are in the air room here as well. Again, the phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. We're going to go directly into a phone call, and we have Kelly from Monterey. Kelly, welcome to GeekSpeak. Kelly, are you with us? And Kelly's not with us, and it's going to just be a second till we figure out why that is. And hopefully we'll figure that out in just a minute. But, Marky, do you have any other points we could address?
Yes, you know, it's difficult to call a stranger and know exactly what to say. And I think Sean brought up a good point before. If you've read news releases or press releases from that company, very often you can use that as an entree. You can say, I read the article about such and such. I really liked your quote about the wireless industry. I'm fascinated with the industry. I wonder if we could sit down for a few minutes and talk about it. The other thing you can do is have a pre-prepared phone script that says something like, hello, my name is Lyle Troxell. I have 10 years experience in the IT industry as a software programmer. In addition to that, I know Perl, SQL, and several other programs. I have an MSEE from Iowa State University. When can I come in for an interview?
Well, so you started out by going, when do you want me to come in?
Yes.
That takes some guts.
It really does. And, you know, I find that people want to give up after about 5 or 6 phone calls. They just say, oh, I can't take it. I can't go any further. And when I'm coaching people, I do coach them to continue to make calls. And usually after about 12 or 15 calls, they've got an interview. I have an example of a man I've been working with named Michael, who is a network engineer. And he had been calling companies. He had called about 10 companies, and we were working together privately, and he called me and he said, I can't do this. I'm not a salesperson. I'm an engineer. And I said, I know you are, and I want you to continue to be an engineer, so make a few more calls. After 15 calls, he got an interview with the director of operations at AOL Time Warner.
So it worked.
It worked.
And do you have a lot of those stories of it working?
So many stories, I couldn't even begin to tell you.
Well, we have Kelly. Are you with us from Monterey?
Well, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, and I'm so glad we can. Thank you very much for waiting with us for the technical problems. So, yeah, what's your question, Kelly?
Lyle, it's a question from Marky. Have you got any words or ideas about when making a cold call, particularly to executives? How to get your way through the gatekeeper, or as they used to say in Gulliver's Travels, the flappers. for the executive, the administrative assistant? How do you get by these people?
That's a great question, Kelly, and it's actually addressed in a couple of articles on the Internet, although I'm going to tell you right now anyway, but it's addressed very clearly on a couple of articles of mine on careerjournal.com from the Wall Street Journal. You're first going to get a receptionist from the company, right? You probably are not going to get the admin for the executive first. So you say to that executive, Kelly Jones for Tom Evans, that's all you say. Mm-hmm. And if they say, what is this regarding? You can say, it's business. Because, in fact, it is business.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's say that you have sent a FedEx package, and we all know that FedEx always gets opened. You've sent a FedEx package with your resume or other information to the executive the day before, and then you get the admin, and she or he says, what is this regarding? You can say, it's regarding some correspondence that I sent.
Got it. Okay.
And that normally gets you past those people?
Yes. This actually happens, Kelly, when you cease to see yourself as a job seeker and begin, as you already may have begun, to see yourself as a business person making a business deal.
Well, Murphy, that's a really good point, I think. Actually, I'm the chief operating officer of a company in Monterey, and at one point in the future, I'll obviously be looking for another job that just doesn't last, you know.
Yeah.
And I was trying to figure out, the mindset that you speak of is, I think, one that is somewhat unusual. There is an employee mentality where you go almost begging for a job. And there's another mentality, and I think you have to be in the kind of a position where you're not too desperate, where you,
yes.
you position yourself as a commodity.
Yes, you have to sort of hypnotize yourself. And if I may offer this, Kelly, for you as a COO, in a very real way, today, if you are not employed and you're not working under anyone else's company, you are in every way, the CEO of your own company.
Oh, excellent.
In other words, you could go down to the Monterey Chamber of Commerce or the Monterey Government Building and get a business license for $150 and make yourself the CEO of your own company. Mm-hmm. Then when you're calling into other companies, you are in fact speaking to a peer.
Uh-huh. Oh, very excellent. Well, thank you very much.
Sure,
Kelly.
Thanks
for the call, Kelly.
Bye-bye now.
Yeah, it's interesting the mindset you really have to put yourself in. That's a lot of the deal, isn't it? Getting yourself in the position of, I'm not being desperate, I'm not being, you know, I'm not hunting for a job. I'm contacting a business person about a business situation.
Exactly.
That's really crucial. Now, you specified to Kelly how you get past that receptionist to the executive's assistant, let's say, but how do you get past them, or can you?
To the executive assistant, you can simply, if you have maybe mailed something a couple of days before or even sent an email, you can say it's regarding correspondence. And if they say correspondence regarding what, you can say it's a business proposal, because it's actually very real that your resume is a business proposal. You are sending something that proposes that you become an employee of that company and make a business-like contribution to that company. So you're not really lying. You're just kind of stretching the truth.
John from Santa Cruz, welcome to Geek Speak.
Oh, hello. This is one of those other questions for the geeks.
That's fine.
That's okay. If you're not well-informed, but you wanted to get some general strategies for putting together a client-server network, and you wanted to know what software would be most affordable to get started in a small business, if you could consider going to a Linux server with Windows 98 machines, if that's what you've already starting with as your workstations, or you can go to older client server software. What would be a general way to get that kind of savvy?
Well, first off, when you're talking about client server,
right?
Are you talking about file serving? Are you talking about an intraweb?
Talking about a very, very small business with a few like contact management applications, like a gold mine that you want to share, and so on.
But are you providing web through this network, or are you just
no?
just no, running your business?
You've got your web going through your ISP.
Okay, so you're running your business and you want to make sure you've got like your financial system running, that kind of thing?
Have a half a dozen workstations linked together.
That's not that small
of
a business.
I haven't seen anything to the contrary. I don't believe the Goldmine is available for Linux, unless you're using the Goldmine that's a peer-to-peer file sharing version, which goes up to a certain amount of users. Once it gets past that point, you need to get the client-server version.
What's Goldmine?
It's a contact tracking.
Well, like it would be like ACT or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, do you already have some systems already?
Well, what we already have is we have our workstations, and we can't afford to replace them right away, and they have Windows 98 and a bunch of software on them, but none of them are linked. And we're getting a low-end server with no server software. And mm-hmm. so the question is, how can we get started with some server software since we're, getting off the ground on a very tight budget?
Sure. If you're talking about going with something like Goldmine, then the operating system will very much depend on what you're going to be running with it. If you find that you're going to be using a peer-to-peer setup, if you're just doing file serving, for example, Linux is a great solution. Novell is one as well. But if you're talking about just straight cost, Linux or FreeBSD would be great in that regard.
What was the second one?
FreeBSD. Those require a little bit more technical knowledge. However, if you're installing something like Red Hat, you'll find that it's very easy to
use. Red Hat is the distribution of Linux.
Yeah, sorry.
I appreciate, Miles, that it's true that you could go to a Linux environment, but if you're already running Windows 98, it means that you're whoever your group is, even maybe it's just you, you're aware of how the systems work pretty well. And I'm assuming you said you already have a server, a low-end server coming in. Is that what kind of server is that? Is that a Windows 2000 or XP?
It's got nothing on it. It's like a low-end Dell, a minimal server.
Well, don't feel like you're tied down to the software you already have. You could possibly export that information out to another application that would work better on the server. So you might want to think about that while you're looking for software.
Yeah, if you already have ACT or something, you could actually go to some other package. You know, one of the things is going to be that if you currently you have no operating systems, if you're going to be buying like Microsoft server stuff, you're going to be spending quite a bit of money.
That's what we're trying to avoid doing.
Yeah, so if you're looking at that bottom line, get out of there, then Linux, Red Hat distribution would be great.
Let's make a mistake. I mean, if you set up a Linux box, you're going to have that ramp-up time to make sure you have it going. Red Hat has definitely made it a lot easier than it has been in the past. On the other side, a Linux box or a FreeBSD box, you're going to find that it's a lot easier to maintain than it is in the Windows box. In other words, when you set it up, aside from running out of disk space, chances are if your setup is correct, you're not going to have to really touch it.
And you won't have to deal with a lot of these virus updates or security updates that are kind of plague the Microsoft administrator.
Well, you still have to do security updates, but you are going to be, in practice, much less susceptible to the security problems that go around because a lot of them are targeted toward the Microsoft operating systems.
From the hardware perspective, you said that none of the computers are linked. I'm assuming you mean that there's no network at all. And you're going to probably have to get PCI network cards. These are about $20, maybe a little bit less a piece. Throw them into each one of those machines, and I would do that prior to... Well, and you can run your Windows 98. That's not going to be a problem for you for your non-server machines, and they can still connect to the server. But there's a bit of a technical issue, and I wouldn't. I think it behoove you to talk with a company that sets up business networks.
Yeah, you might want to look into getting like a networking consultant for a period
for a
of, time,
bit of time
to getting
yeah.
it up and running.
And then you can always, if you've got an emergency and you've got a lot of clients, then someone knows what's going on.
Before you talk to them, they'll make a list of the things that are important to you. What kind of applications are you looking for to be run on the server? And,
right.
And then you can start figuring out what solutions.
John, thanks for the call.
Okay, thank you.
All right, back to our subject at hand, which is online job hunting. If you want to call in and join the conversation, 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. But you're welcome to do what John just did and call in about any kind of technical thing that you think the geeks might be able to help you with. We had a call off air. What do you say when you get the VP's or the executive's voicemail?
You do not want to leave a voicemail. It's a matter of not leaving the ball in their court. So sometimes that can be very frustrating for people because they almost always get voicemail. What I recommend is to actually make your calls, if that's the case, if you're getting voicemail, before business hours and after business hours. Who else is crazy enough to be in the office at 8:30 p.m. it's going to be a VP.
Right. And it's going to be someone that's maybe overworked and wants somebody.
Exactly.
And it's going to be exactly when they're thinking about it. Wow, it's 9 o'clock at night and I'm still here. I need help. Oh, hello. Yeah, that's a good point to call someone. I like that.
What about when you actually see a job posting? They always have someone's name at the bottom. They say, do not call, you know, that sort of thing. Should you be calling those people?
What if you just happen to have not seen that job posting, if you know what I mean, and happen to have just chosen that company of your own free will because you're interested?
Okay.
Do you get my meaning?
Right, right. But you should go up the ladder from there. You shouldn't be calling the HR person or the hiring person.
Probably not.
Okay.
And you should just state that you are interested in the company and state your qualifications, as I did in that phone pitch a while back, and very confidently say, when can I come in for an interview?
Right.
What you will probably get as an objection to that is, well, we don't have any jobs right now. And this is where the non-desperation attitude comes in. The thing that you should say to that is, well, that's fine. I'm not really looking for something right now, and I'm certainly not looking for just any company. I'm interested in your company and job openings that you may have in the future.
And that's a great way to show that you're not desperate.
Yeah.
That's one really good point. All right. Well, we've got Bruce from Mono A. Bruce, welcome to Geek Speak.
I'm on?
You are.
Oh, great. Great. Yeah. Two things. One, I own a company, and I get asked these questions all the time. So I'm not sure if you're doing it, but I would strongly like to encourage you to record this and post it on your website, because this is really good stuff as to how to get yourself heard, how to announce that you are a contender that really has some value.
Are you someone that does do hiring?
Well, we don't hire other than our own customers.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, to us. The technical expertise is in material. The programming and technical stuff we do is actually pretty easy. The difficult part is somebody who has a feel for the business we're in. And in our case, it's show business, and it's a technological
right.
technology for show business.
But you appreciate someone calling that is doing the kind of things that Marky's suggesting?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is really good stuff. And until you've been through the mill and face people at the other side, this is good stuff. So I definitely hope you're recording it and you're going to post it
yes,
so everybody
we
else
will
can
be.
Use it.
You can hear the show within 24 hours on geekspeak.org. Now, Bruce, you called about something else as well, correct?
Yeah, the other thing is I do have an answer for the previous caller who was wondering about setting up a network. We do hand out a lot of advice like that. The advice is basically stick with Windows 98. As peer-to-peer, it's efficient, it's fast, it's cheap, it's reliable. Everybody understands it. And you can concentrate on your own business. You don't have to fool around with all this doggone equipment and stuff.
Now, of course, when you do Windows 98 environment, it's not exactly necessarily secure. You're going to have to do some kind of firewall, and there's some things you have to pay attention to in the security realm so people don't steal your lists.
Oh, yeah, but chances are a small business who's asking these questions isn't going to be involved in things like that. And then the next step, of course, would be something like Linux with Samba, and the only thing, kind of like learning to swim. You can't learn how to swim until you get in the water.
Right.
And then you have to learn things that are a little bit different than what you expected.
Great. Well, Bruce, thank you very much for the call.
Well, thank you for the program.
Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe even use one of the other machines aside from the server. To do the peer-to-peer handling of sharing of data, that sort of thing.
Yeah, well,
until you get the server up to where you want it to be.
Yeah.
So sure, definitely. Why not?
And Bruce, if I may comment, thank you for your feedback about how employers feel about people calling them. Very often people feel that they're somehow bothering someone or being a nuisance. But in fact, a Society for Human Resources Management study tells us that it actually costs $12,000 to $22,000 to bring someone all the way through the hiring process. Once you consider the time the managers have to spend, HR has to spend, the advertising, you're doing them a big favor by calling them and presenting yourself as potential talent.
Especially since you've already done the idea that you would be a good fit at the company. I mean, at least from your perspective, that's an important step.
Right, because hopefully you have thoroughly investigated the company on the internet at their website. by putting their name in google.com, which Sean suggested you might find a press release or a news release, and at the other databases you can get from the library. The more you know about a company, the more flattering it is to them and the more attractive you seem to them.
Okay, Marky, what about how much weight should I place on agencies and headhunters and those kind of people to help me find a job?
Good question, Sean. As I said, the Department of Labor is telling us that about 16 to 18% of people do get their jobs through recruiting and agencies. So I would spend my time accordingly, about 16% of my time doing that, and maybe 1% of my time answering newspaper ads, and probably 30% of my time networking, and maybe 36% of my time doing cold calling, and then the rest of the time posting my resume on the internet and answering internet ads. I think once you get your time management down and you really look at what's giving you the best yield, it will tell you in a week or so what you should be doing.
Okay.
Michael from Santa Cruz, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thank you. I had a question. I have a number of friends who are, they're not full programmers or engineers. They've been technical support, maybe software QA. And the trouble that they've been having is that it seems that as they get more desperate for jobs, the job that they seek is kind of devolving down to a generic system administrator. And they're one of 20 or 33,500 system administrators that are applying for the job. So I was wondering if you had any words about how to specialize or call out attention, maybe one of those technical positions that is a little bit harder to describe.
Good question. You know what I'd like to do? I'd like to give away a trade secret right now on the radio. It's a website called www.vcbuzz.com, and that's V as in victory, C as in cat, B-U-Z-Z.com. On that site, they list every new startup that has been financed from today back to a year ago. Now, what happens when a company receives VC funding? They have to hire. So if you can reach these startups, and let's face it, I know startups used to be very unstable and nobody wanted to look at them, but let's take a look at the Fortune 500 and see how well they're doing.
Right.
You know, startups are a really viable place to find jobs. If you can call that CEO or CTO before anybody else does on that vcbuzz.com, again, you're going to have no competition.
That's a great point. So what you're suggesting is, yeah, there's a lot of people out there in that area. Well, do it before it even hits that area.
Exactly.
The entire market. Yeah, it's great. I hope that helps. Ted from Corralitos, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi. Thanks a lot. This is a great show. I do have a quick question, though. How would you approach an organization that hires by committee?
Do you mean by that they are interviewing you in a group, or that they hire by... I see what you're saying. That's actually kind of a complex question, but can you clarify that for me?
Well, so you may have, say, a research organization that has a number of different departments, and usually they will hire, they'll have a hiring committee of, you know, eight people that will do the interviews. There's actually no one person with the authority to hire.
Okay, if you're interviewing with eight people, one thing that I suggest you do, as laborious as it is, clerically speaking, is definitely write a thank you note to each of those people. And as you talk to those people, this is why I said it's a complex question, because nonverbal behavior cannot be illustrated over the radio, obviously. But as you talk to each one of them, I want you to sort of mirror the body position or the body language that they have. That will give them more comfort toward you. Also, if you're answering one person's question, be sure to look in their eyes for at least 30 seconds and look into the eyes of all the eight other people as if all of them asked you that same question.
Okay, so just be sure that they've all got, you have their attention, they have, and they know you are looking at them. Okay.
And may I suggest that cold calling, when you first start, even if that you know that that target's going to be that situation, if you talk to one person and they're on your side, that goes a long way into a large group organization, because then when they talk again together without you, one of those people likes you and is representing you.
So
I think that's good.
So a good idea would be to go ahead and cold call and just try to get a champion, if you will.
Exactly.
Okay.
Now, this
but
is
that was Lyle's idea.
since we're running out of time, I've got to say that when I was laid off from AMD and Marky came in as a career counselor, she gave us two one-day classes. And she went over the things that are in her book, Fearless Interviewing, and how to properly prepare for an interview, what to say, a lot of great tips and pieces of information that I know we're not going to have time to get into today. But if you go to markystein.com, there's a lot of good information just there alone. And your book is pretty amazing. So I just wanted to say there's a lot more to what Marky has to offer than just the tips that we've given today.
And her book is Fearless Interviewing, available through McGraw-Hill. It was on the top list at Barnes & Noble and Amazon when she self-published, and then McGraw-Hill came up and said, yeah, let's take it. And, of course, Marky, you're working on another book as well, correct?
Yes, I am. I'm really excited about this book because it will be including a lot of the cold calling techniques I've just been talking about and other job-seeking techniques that I have not been able to talk about at this broadcast, but it's called From Laid Off to Turned On, a Five-Step Program to a New Career.
Well, Marky, thank you. This program is supported by a grant from Seagate Technology. Seagate is a worldwide supplier of disk drives for PCs and servers and innovations for products like the Microsoft Xbox, digital video recorders, and digital jukeboxes. Information is at Seagate.com. This is Geek Speak. I'm Lyle Troxell. With me in the air room has been Marky Stein. You can learn more about her at markystein.com or visiting the Geek Speak website.
We should probably spell that
out. Yeah, Marky, M-A-R-K-Y Stein, STEIN.com. Marky, thank you very much for joining us today.
It's been my pleasure.
And for helping people find work. Geeks, Miles and Sean, thank you very much for joining us. Maggie answered the phones and is our producer. Thank you. And for those of you that called in, especially Ted, for thank you very much for the calls. But everybody that called in, thank you very much for making Geek Speak what it is. Without you, it would just be a bunch of geeks going around blabbing. Who wants to listen to that?
Later today on This American Life, let's say you had a superpower. Maybe you could fly. Would you fight crime? Work for world peace?
If I could fly, the first thing I would do is fly into the bar, check out what's going on there, fly back home, attach my baby to me and fly to a doctor's appointment at 11:30. Then I think I would fly to Atlantic City.
Superpowers, later, Bubble Radio International.
On This American Life at 7 p.m. here on KUSP Central Coast Public Radio.
This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KBDH Santa Cruz, on the web at kusp.org. I'm Lyle Troxell. We'll be back next week. Again, we were talking with Marky Stein, author of Fearless Interview from McGraw-Hill, markystein.com. And this is Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. Until next week.
From this and other NPR stations. Contributors also include NetNumina, partnering with financial companies to transform business challenges into viable e-solutions in Boston and New York, on the web at netnumina.com. And by Wellington Management Company, providing investment advice to clients worldwide. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
While you're away at work, NPR News will be at work, producing today's edition of All Things Considered. This is Robert Siegel. What happened? What does it mean? How do the great events of the day play out in the everyday lives of Americans? We'll have some of the answers at the end of your workday and mine on All Things Considered from NPR News.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.